utlo ongahlile ka botle le nna ha ke sa gona ke a shwa ke ke bela ke a shwa ba molao ha ba ikene iyo ongahlile ma utlo ongahlile ka botle le nna ha ke sa gona ke a shwa ke ke bela ke a shwa ba molao ha ba ikene.
yeng ay namela spor ar yeng ar yeng ar yeng ar yeng ar yeng ay namela spor ar yeng ar yeng ar yeng ar yeng ar yeng ay namela spor ar yeng ar yeng ar yeng ar yeng ar yeng ay namela spor ar yeng ar yeng best pine mara tadi wedi khafaga saka khafaga stek ar yeng ar yeng ar yeng ay namela spor ar yeng ar yeng best pine mara tadi wedi khafaga saka khafaga stek
To Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, for millions of people around the globe, the U.S., under the administration of convicted felon Donald Trump, has acted, it's beyond illegal, it's sort of illegal, as if laws meant nothing. They've kidnapped an elected leader of a sovereign nation and declared that he, Trump, will henceforth run that sovereign nation. If you think flagrant bullying, mafioso might makes right behavior is what international law is created to combat and basic human decency is designed to reject, you would be supported by the vast majority of the world's people. But alas, you live in the U.S. and rely for your worldview on U.S. media, and thus you are fed authoritarian apologies disguised as disinterested analysis, like that from AP's headline on January 6th. Quote, Trump's vague claims of the U.S. running Venezuela raise questions about planning for what comes next, close quote. Because you see, the problem about Trump's claim that his weirdo government will now run the country of Venezuela isn't that it's crazy with a capital K, but that Trump, quote, has offered almost no details about how it will do so, close quote. Our conversation and understanding of our political power is so warped that even a thoughtful piece from Nation of Change says, quote, the White House has not explained how it intends to legally justify the detention of a foreign head of state, the reported civilian deaths, or the long-term scope of a military quarantine designed to coerce a sovereign nation, close quote. When we really need to accept that they will just not justify it. And we'll simply declare that anyone who asks for justification is a terrorist. And news media will report that as one side of a two-sided argument. We need to act on that knowledge. As a Counterspin guest said recently, the cavalry is not coming. You're it. We'll talk about the Venezuela invasion as neither a beginning nor an end with Michelle Elner, Latin America campaign coordinator of Code Pink. That's this week on Counterspin. But first, a quick look back at some recent press. Millions have seen the video, but as we record on January 8th, the news is still coming in. And some reports suggest that you should not believe your eyes, that saw ICE agents murder Renee Nicole Good as she attempted to slowly move her car away from them. What you are instructed to believe, according to Donald Trump and those in media who obey him, is that Good was a professional agitator who was very disorderly, obstructing and resisting, who then violently, willfully, and viciously ran over the ICE officer who seems to have shot her in self-defense. The New York Times now seeks points for pressing Trump on that conclusion and for printing that he showed a, quote, reflexive defense of what has become a sometimes violent federal crackdown on immigration, close quote. That's neat, except that that supposed nuance has to battle in Times readers' minds with the textbook garbage they also put forward, with a piece headed, "Video of ICE Shooting Becomes a Political Rorschach Test." I don't need to tell you that the Times told you that you can't really know what you saw or what it means because, quote, in a polarized country, high-ranking officials were offering definitive and starkly contrasting accounts long before the facts could be established, close quote. The Times sees its role in telling you that whether or not you believe Renee Good deserved to be murdered depends on whether you're a Democrat or a Republican. Someone should tell them that millions of Americans are over that whole line. You're listening to Counterspin, brought to you each week by the Media Watch Group FAIR. Recent months have seen the U.S. government commit illegal action after illegal action in and around Venezuela, killing people on boats in the Caribbean, bombing civilians, and, Happy New Year, kidnapping Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro and his wife and former leader of the National Assembly, Celia Flores. And all along, U.S. corporate news media have whitewashed every step with language that excused rather than interrogated. It was a capture, not a kidnapping, an operation, not a crime, and act of war? What's that? This, along with a follow-the-bouncing-ball approach, as every incoherent rationale leads to the next. Narco-terrorism, except Venezuela contributes next to nothing to drugs entering the U.S., and how would that square anyway with pardoning Honduran President Juan Orlando Hernandez, convicted in a U.S. court for large-scale cocaine trafficking? Okay, but they stole our oil. That's weird on its face, and also U.S. oil companies are not shut out of Venezuela, and those that left said that they wanted to. Okay, but regime change, because the U.S. is allowed to choose other countries' leaders because of the wonderful things he does. If you don't think Donald freaking Trump should rule the hemisphere, and hey, why not the world? Well, then you'd best avoid news like that coming from Reuters on January 3rd, which oohs and ahs over how Trump carried out a daring mission involving elite U.S. troops who had insight into Maduro's pattern of life that made grabbing him seamless. The world and the news about it are disheartening, but work like that of our guest reminds us that there is a way forward in these times, and it's found with one another, whatever the papers might say. Michelle Elner is a Latin America campaign coordinator of the feminist grassroots organization Code Pink. She joins us now by phone. Welcome to Counterspin, Michelle Elner.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, I would ask you, first of all, just to help us fill in a space that U.S. corporate news media leave empty, and that is the voices of Venezuelan people. And I say voices because part of what we want to do is get past this kind of them versus us conversation, you know, in which Venezuelans speak with one voice and United States citizens speak with another univocal voice. I know we're still in early days, but what would you have people understand about the response of Venezuelans and Venezuelan Americans to this almost unbelievable violation?
Yes. Well, I'm going to start by saying that I'm a Venezuelan American, and in Venezuela, we have a day that it's more or less like April Fool's Day. Mm-hmm. It's called Día de los Inocentes, like Innocent Day. And this year, I pranked a lot of people. So when I got the news that the president of Venezuela was kidnapped with his wife, I really thought that that was a prank. I really couldn't believe it. And then when I saw the press conference on the 3rd, everything I felt, it was in my stomach. I got, you know, like nausea of seeing this president basically say that the country where I grew up and where my family is, it's disposable, that they're going to run the country and they're going to take the oil that belongs to the U.S. And then see the media, right, repeat this, some of them saying that this is a good thing for Venezuela. So I think that what the media is doing is basically not listening to voices that are in Venezuela that maybe are not influencers, analysts. Maybe they don't even speak English, you know. They don't have platforms. Maybe they don't have, I don't know, internet or whatever. Mm-hmm. These voices that in Venezuela had been excluded before the Bolivarian Revolution. And those are the same voices that today the U.S. government continues to ignore. Because the truth is that Venezuelans are not politically monolith. There is a diversity in the minds of Venezuelans in terms of politics. And people in Venezuela can oppose the government, but still reject U.S. intervention. They can be angry at corruption or mistakes that the government has done, but still remember, you know, foreign interventions and foreign meddling. So when the U.S. media just puts Venezuela into a single voice, sometimes they quote, you know, like the poor, helpless victims of Maduro regime, or they talk about the other side, like ideological supporters. And it erases, you know, the rest and the experiences and the memory and the history, you know. And so that I think that's what's missing. And then also like the moral accountability, right? Because once this complex situation in terms of Venezuela disappears, then the intervention is actually easier to justify because the public here in the U.S. won't consider or won't think about Venezuelans, the fear that they have, like, you know, families that cannot sleep at night. I talk to my friends every single day, and they're mothers that, you know, they're supposed to be strong for their community because they're community leaders, and they need to be strong for their family and their children, and they are terrified. They cannot sleep at night. They're not thinking about what the Venezuelans fear or think, but only if the actions that the U.S. is doing is effective or not. That's all the media is talking right now. Is Trump administration, is this good for Venezuelans? Is this technically okay? Is this legal? Is this blah? They're not talking about what Venezuelans and Venezuela think or feel because they're not like teaching people to hate Venezuelans, but they're basically teaching them to not care about them.
The same way they treat U.S. opinion, you know, and I know that Code Pink has talked about and others are aware of the fact that there is widespread opposition to this undeclared, illegal, unsubstantiated war against Venezuela. There is, you know, objection to that among U.S. people as well. So if we kind of remove this top-down conversation, if we talk about people to people, we would be having a very different conversation.
Yes, you're absolutely correct. Like, Palestine is a clear example of how this works, because the U.S. media just presents what's happening like it's a conflict between governments or between organizations. And everything else is stripped out, you know, like in that human connection. So what the people in the U.S. have to do to rely on the information, it's watch social media, the videos coming out from Gaza. And we don't have that right now in Venezuela because, as I said, like people are terrified. The people who right now are, the voices are being elevated are the influencers, are the opposition, who I must say they're not the majority of Venezuelans. And that's what I want people to understand, that that opposition that is asking for the U.S. to bomb their country, they are not the majority of Venezuelans. So yes, they are the voices that are elevated. Even, you know, Maria Corina Machado, which is the leader of that opposition, received the Nobel Prize. Right. This is something that I... that for me was also a shock, and it got me like really mad. But those are the voices who are being elevated. It's just ridiculous that nobody, like the media, is basically, you know, manufacturing consent for every war that the U.S. is bringing us into.
You know, I saw you cited in a piece by Jose Atiles that was about Puerto Rico. And I think folks will be like, wait, we're talking about Venezuela. But in many ways, it's the same story, because this Monroe Doctrine, as reinvented, if anything, more violently or more indiscriminately by Donald Trump, is not about borders. And as Atiles says, military officials refer to Puerto Rico as an aircraft carrier, you know, as a landing strip for their planned operations in the Caribbean and Latin and South America. And, you know, I can't even start about how this is happening in Vieques, which our older and more historically minded listeners will know that. Anyway, this is just an utter silencing of the impact on regular people, people who are not necessarily the targeted enemy that you're going to read about in the press, but they're still going to bear the brunt of U.S. military presence, shall we say, for their whole lifetime. So I think it highlights how we're not talking about the people who are actually impacted by these maneuvers or operations or whatever you want to call them. There are real people at the sharp end of this, yes?
Yes, that's exactly correct. This is what Trump is doing, using Puerto Rico as a launch pad for the war in Venezuela. It's getting the Puerto Ricans, you know, more surveillance, more environmental risk. Already, you know, like a lot of people are suffering from cancer due to, you know, the experiments made in the island. For them, this is not just abstract. That is why people are racing in Puerto Rico. Some people here in the U.S. from the Diaspora Palante Collective and others are raising their voice, because the same logic that was sent in Vieques, you know, using that occupied territory to project power abroad, is being used now for Venezuela.
And U.S. media consumers live, and we are very much encouraged to live inside a kind of bubble, you know, where, for instance, as Adam Johnson points out in The Intercept, you might think from reading the U.S. media that there was an international call out for Maduro's arrest. But no, that was just the U.S. You might think there were international sanctions on Venezuelan oil trade. But no, those were just U.S. sanctions. You know, international law is reported largely as kind of an interference in U.S. hemispheric policing, when actually the whole world outside the U.S. wants international law to be meaningful. And so it's scary that U.S. media are building and pushing a story where what the U.S. says just goes, you know. But it's hopeful, I want to say, that billions of people are not buying that storyline and they're protesting. And what should we know about what's happening? And maybe we aren't seeing in the U.S. media, but what's happening in resistance to this?
So first I want to comment on what you saw about the bubble. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's what happened after the Iraq war and how, like, all these legal theories were, you know, manufactured and abused after 9/11. All these, like, what we hear now is the same message, is terrorism, is narco-terrorism. That word has been used and abused and to justify so many things, and including the kidnapping of a sitting president in Venezuela. And what I say to everyone is, like, Venezuela is a testing ground. And if Trump is successful in removing the person in power right now, removing the revolution, and is successful in keeping, you know, Maduro kidnapped, etc., then the next country will be Cuba, and the next country will be Mexico and Colombia, and then us, because they're already treating opposition in the U.S. as domestic terrorism.
Right.
And that word is just invented. There's absolutely nothing that can prove any of that. Even like the indictment in Maduro, they took off the terrorism language and now they're using other things because they just use it to manufacture the consent for that. So yes, the U.S. bends the rules the way that they want and invents rules also that are U.S. law but not international law. And, you know, that is, it is scary, like you say. It is very, very scary. But it's also what gives me hope is that I know that 70% of the U.S. public is against this war. And they're opening their eyes, as you said. And it's the only way that we can stop him. We know that he can do whatever he wants. Right today, there was a vote to advance a war powers resolution against the war in Venezuela that passed, but immediately he wrote a tweet saying, like, talking bad about the Republicans that voted yes for a debate. It was not even the vote.
Right.
I don't know when your listeners are going to hear about this, but, you know, it's his way of saying, basically, I can do whatever I want. And it's not the war powers resolution that is going to stop him. Even if the ICC decided to, you know, that it doesn't stop Netanyahu, right? So the only people that can stop him is us. For that, we need to unify our fight and also care about Venezuelans. So don't let the media distract you from the procedures or the, you know, the technical stuff, and focus on the Venezuelan people who don't want an intervention. We have our problems, you know, we have our opinions, but we do not want bombs. This has never happened to us. You know, we are a peaceful country. We are a peaceful continent. So I just ask your listeners and everyone to open up a little bit your hearts and listen to Venezuelans in Venezuela. There are medias that are elevate some, you know, social media, small social media that are over there, you know, demanding people to talk and recording the people that are mobilizing. There are huge, huge mobilizations against what the U.S. is doing. So listen to those voices.
Including around the world, you know, around the world there are protests against this. And I would just finally bring you back, though, because I do feel that there are non-corporate media who are stepping up, you know, who are trying to present those voices. And as you point out, social media that are bringing us voices directly. And I do sense a lot of outrage, but it's so almost big because we understand it's not just about Venezuela. We understand it's this Monroe Doctrine, this idea that the U.S. is in charge of every other country in the hemisphere and the world. And we understand that there's a large system problem. And I think lots of people also understand that corporate news are not going to explain that problem accurately or let them know how to intervene in it, you know. But there are reporters who are kind of boats against the current and they deserve support. But we do need to have different news sources. And I just wonder, in terms of journalism, finally, what would you be asking for? How does appropriate journalism of this kind of situation, what does it do that we're not seeing from corporate journalism? What could good reporting do?
Yeah, well, I think, as I said, that the reporting right now is only talking about the procedures, only talking about, like, if the strategy is good or not mm-hmm. for the U.S., etc. So what I would like to see is reporters really, like, elevating voices in Venezuela, but also making a little bit more deeper into the consequences of this precedent, because it's, as I said, it's not only Venezuela, and the legal argument that the Trump administration is using right now, they don't have any limit, you know? Like, they are saying basically, like, the, for example, the blowing up of the votes, they're saying that they can go there because there's drugs. There is no limitation of anything, but they can just go, and if they think that there's drugs in that boat, they can kill everyone. No due process, no evidence, nothing. Just blow up a boat that they think has drugs. So what happens if tomorrow, I don't know, Trump says that there is a gang of El Cartel de la Luna mm-hmm. in Chicago, right. in a residence or in someplace, and then just decides to blow one city of America.
Right.
Like, we don't stop this right now. It's going to come back to us. And it does already. Like, you know, another thing that is missing and that I am really upset about is that they are talking about when this happened, when he kidnapped the president in Venezuela, he said, well, we didn't lose any military assets. We didn't lose, you know, any U.S. soldiers. Mm-hmm. We didn't lose the helicopters, but 80 people died that day. 80 people. And there are no names that the media is even, like, trying to figure out who they are, you know? Only Cuba did put out the names of the people. But the media is not searching for that information because they're erasing the lives of Venezuelans and Cubans, but the lives of people who are in Venezuela. So that's another thing that I think that the media is not doing. And if you don't put a face and you don't put a light, you just say, oh, we didn't lose any helicopter. But 80 people, you know, 80 lives, 80 people with family, 80 parents, 80 siblings. Yeah. So it's really upsetting for me. And, you know, the other thing is that they say, well, there were mostly not civilians. There were soldiers or they were from the military.
Right.
And I just want to say something that here in the U.S., because there's a bubble, don't understand about the military in Venezuela. And it's that the military in Venezuela is not really like here. The military in Venezuela, they're really embedded in the Venezuelan life. They're people that, you know, they provide help when they're distributing food. They provide, you know, help when there's a climate emergency. It's not like here, for example, where, you know, ICE agents just shot a woman.
It's not combatants like they're on a battlefield, you know.
Exactly. And, yeah. Here in the U.S., the soldiers are, or the military, they are like, they are in a battlefield, but it's not like that in Venezuela. And some people do quote, like, instances where the military has intervened and, you know, in protest. But the other thing that they don't say is that the opposition in Venezuela who do this protest or have done, like the Guarimbas, they are really, really violent opposition. They killed a Chavista. They burned him alive just because he was Chavista. So this wouldn't be allowed here in the U.S. Like, can you imagine? So this thing that happened here with the military or the ICE, when, imagine this happened in Venezuela, this ICE agent that just killed someone in the car. If that happened in Venezuela, that will be like the news, you know, like horrible, Maduro just, you know, thugs or terrorists, whatever. So it's something that those nuances, the media, they need to be, if they wanted to, they would do it. I think they just don't want to. They're just like as I said before, manufacturing consent for U.S. wars. But if they really wanted to, they would go in Venezuela and they would listen to Venezuela.
Absolutely. We'll end it on that note for now. We've been speaking with Michelle Ellner. She's Latin America campaign coordinator at Code Pink. You can follow their work online at codepink.org, but I suspect they'd rather see you out in the street. Thank you very much, Michelle Ellner, for joining us this week on Counterspin.
Thank you so much. And yes, please, out of the streets right now.
And that's it for Counterspin for this week. Counterspin is produced by the National Media Watch Group, FAIR, based in New York. The show is engineered by Michael Cherry. I'm Janine Jackson. Thanks for listening to Counterspin. Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, for millions of people around the globe, the U.S., under the administration of convicted felon Donald Trump, has acted, it's beyond illegal, it's sort of illegal, as if laws meant nothing. They've kidnapped an elected leader of a sovereign nation and declared that he, Trump, will henceforth run that sovereign nation. If you think flagrant bullying, mafioso might makes right behavior is what international law is created to combat and basic human decency is designed to reject, you would be supported by the vast majority of the world's people. But alas, you live in the U.S. and rely for your worldview on U.S. media, and thus you are fed authoritarian apologies disguised as disinterested analysis, like that from AP's headline on January 6th. Quote, Trump's vague claims of the U.S. running Venezuela raise questions about planning for what comes next, close quote. Because you see, the problem about Trump's claim that his weirdo government will now run the country of Venezuela isn't that it's crazy with a capital K, but that Trump, quote, has offered almost no details about how it will do so, close quote. Our conversation and understanding of our political power is so warped that even a thoughtful piece from Nation of Change says, quote, the White House has not explained how it intends to legally justify the detention of a foreign head of state, the reported civilian deaths, or the long-term scope of a military.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in